Hi, this is Gillian from Rest Reflections. Welcome to episode 11 of At Work, Rest Reflections podcast, which is all about all things inequality, injustice, and oppression in the workplace. I want to start this podcast by presenting my apologies. I had a listen of episode 10 a couple of days ago, and I realized how shouty I was. And I know that as part of the podcast, I explained that I had my new kitten in the background. And I think that unconsciously, I must have been trying to cover the bell or the meowing. And it resulted in a recording, which was quite loud. And so I listened to it and I thought, oh, bloody hell, that is a little bit shouty in places. And so I want to apologize. It's interesting that nobody gave me this feedback though. Nobody came to me and said, wait, that is a little bit too loud. So I don't know how you've experienced it. I think it's an interesting reflection to share, but it's been present on my mind. And I guess maybe it links very neatly onto what I would like to think about today. And so, yes, sorry, apology. I didn't realize that I came across so loud. In part, it was, I'm pretty sure, me trying to manage the background noise. And so I can hear my kitten in the background outside my door again, but I am not going to increase the volume of my voice. It's probably best that you hear in the background than you hear me shouting. So let's get right into it. 11, episode 11 of At Work. This is the number of recording that we have had, as I explained in the last episode, so therefore episode 10, we are thinking really hard around switching the format, increasing the number of voices, the number of perspective in At Work. So bear with us. A lot of work is taking place in the background around maybe diversifying At Work and providing to you a multitude of, I guess, stories. So more in due course. But today I want to start by sharing a story that was shared with me, and it was as part of our recruitment processes. Someone came to us interested in working with us and shared their experience, difficult experience in the workplace where they had recurrently been placed in a position of, I would say, maybe advocacy, speaking on behalf of other people in the workplace, or becoming something of the mouthpiece, let's say, for the organization in relation to equality, in relation to racism, in relation to injustice. And I guess this is what has been on my mind over the past few days, thinking about bringing this to At Work. I'm going to call that the Black Advocate for a title, but of course the dynamics and the issues that we are going to cover are not only applicable to Black people, by and large they will be applicable to people of color and possibly to other marginalized group who slot into the position of having to do the work of getting their institution, their workplace, to think about inequality, injustice, and oppression. So, what are the issues at stake and why does it matter? I guess, first of all, it matters because we do know that organizations have a tendency to retaliate, to punish, to sanction those who attempt to make them see, to make them confront part of the organization, part of the organizational functioning that we are not prepared to see. So we spoke in quite at length about this dynamic. I'm not going to unpack it so much in this podcast. Nonetheless, what I do want us to think about is the processes that might become engaged from the person or from the perspective of the person who might take up the role of the Black advocate. So three things to consider. I often say in my anti-racism coaching that it's never a coincidence that we do the work that we do and that we happen to be motivated, activated, inspired even to do equality and justice work. And so part of us better understanding, I guess, ourselves, our motivation, and being reflexive, therefore, around our vulnerabilities. Of course, they might also, in some context, be strength. But in order to really understand what it is that we bring to this struggle, it's important that we are prepared to look at our own histories. Sometimes people are surprised that I encourage them to think about their histories and what they bring into the work of anti-racism, what they bring into the struggle. But essentially what I am saying is that the personal is, of course, political. And so our earlier experience of injustice, of inequality, of marginalization, of discrimination are going to be relevant in this work. And so therefore, they are going to be relevant in the workplace if we get drawn into this kind of issues. Now, I'm not putting any value judgment on whether we decide to take on this work or we decide to stay away. What I am simply saying at this stage is that whichever decision we make cannot sit in isolation from our history. So if we carry, for example, within our internal world, histories of having, say, a target of injustice or having, say, seen her parents, her siblings, people around us experience injustice, we are, of course, more likely to either be sensitive to injustice or perhaps more likely to get involved in position that might give us opportunity to restore justice. And so that becomes important in relation to us possibly getting into patterns of maybe conflict in the workplace around injustice, or patterns of carrying the burden of doing advocacy work around injustice in the workplace. So something to think about. Number one, our histories. Number two, related to our history, it's, I guess, what I would say the role that we tend to fulfill in relationship more generally, and more specifically, the role that we may fulfill within groups, within institutions. So if I carry with me a history of having been unjustly treated or having injustice played out, and I find myself within a group, within a context where injustice is being carried out and other people are silent, then it is likely that I will be the person who gets pulled into fulfilling the role of the advocate, right, of being the mouthpiece for the injustice being carried out. And so by extension, what it means is that I might therefore be vulnerable to being used, to being exploited for those issues for the benefit of the group. So what we are talking about is essentially how our own personal behavior or action or tendencies or patterns, if you like, to be in the world can get used or can get employed for groups who might be unwilling or reluctant to address certain issues, right? And so what that means is that the risks that we have spoken about are not shared fairly or proportionately. They become located on one single individual, so the individual with that particular history and vulnerability. Now, in group analytic thinking, we call that valency, when we tend to find ourselves or attract, we might even say, particular dynamics, or find ourselves reproducing again and again in groups or in situations that are group-based or located the same pattern, when we fulfill the same role, when we find ourselves at the heart of the same dynamic. And so the point here really is not necessarily to lay blame or to say, well, this is something that you have to fix if you find yourself in the position of being the Black advocate, which is a position that myself I'm very familiar with, but is to think also what function, what service even, what serviceability your behavior might be for your organization. And so part of balancing out what goes on in this context might be for you to take a step back so that other people might start to take responsibility for addressing what might be going on in relation to inequality or in relation to injustice in the workplace. So take a step back, which takes me back to the conversation that I've had and I've seen over and over again, which is, why is it always down to me to address those issues? Why is it that no one around me seems to be picking up those issues wherever I find myself? So, of course, it's likely to be a combination of what you bring in relation to your history, but also what the group brings in relation to, you know, the history of people in the group, but most importantly here, in relation to the functioning of the group, right? The process that are taking place in the group. And so the reality is that if you were to shift and take a different position, occupy a different position, now that's going to be very, very hard, because we get pulled really, 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 really strongly into a default way of operating. But nonetheless, if you take a step back and if you attempt and if you are successful in shifting position, that might be, in your case, not take it on the torch, so to speak, not taking on the responsibility for addressing those issues that other people in the team, other people in the organization might be more tempted to take it on. And so maybe that takes me to point three in relation to organizational functioning, which is always, always to remind ourselves that there is more than one person involved at any given time. Sometimes it might look like, say, it's only Ghislaine who raises issues to do with racism, or it's only, I don't know, Becky who speak of homophobia or who speak of issues to do with sexism. And so we can very easily personalize that and make it about them, about their conflict, about their personality, about their motivation. And so what I want you to do is to try to move away from this kind of individualistic thinking and to remind yourself that even though, of course, we cannot take away what brings people to particular conflict, a particular dynamic, the danger if we disproportionately focus our attention, our gaze on the individual that are doing the work, often on behalf of the group, then we are not only likely to reproduce this dynamic of scapegoating, but also really we are taking away responsibility from the group and from work that the group needs to do in relation to its own contribution, thinking about its contribution and reflecting on the pattern that is essentially serving everyone. And so this is what I really wanted you to think about, why you find yourself in this situation, if you find yourself in this situation, and if you do not find yourself in this situation, but nonetheless, you notice that other find themselves in this situation, is to think about your individual contribution, about the group contribution, and what can be done or could be done to rebalance the thinking and the work that is related to inequality, injustice, and oppression, so that it doesn't essentially lay on one person's shoulders. So that is really the context as to why we need to think about it. Now, let's think about possible resolution. As you know, in that work, we try to get practical, we try to get pragmatic. And I think part of the solution in the case of disproportionate advocacy, the Black Advocate, as I have called it for the purpose of this episode, is likely to be related, of course, to the nature of the histories and the dynamic and the process that are happening in the particular group, institution, or organization. But nonetheless, it doesn't mean to say that we can't have some general principle that might be helpful for us to think about. If we see, if we recognize this dynamic, this configuration within groups. Number one is to accept that there is a heavy burden for the person who is engaged in disproportionately carrying on behalf, more than likely, of the group, of the organization, the thinking, the dysfunction even, that might be related to inequality, injustice, and oppression. So it's important that we realize that there is harm that is being done, not only in relation to emotional cost, but because the group is really being deprived of something. And so that takes me to point two. Once we realize that there is harm that is being done to the person that is carrying disproportionately issues to do with inequality, injustice, and oppression, and often issues to do with racism, then I guess the question is, what might be done to support them? What might be done to mitigate the harm? So point two, which is going to be around redistributing responsibilities in relation to thinking, in relation to any dysfunction, any problem, any disturbance that might be going on within the group, within the organization, is actually really explicitly to invite people to take their part of the cake, right? Sometimes it's helpful to introduce a bit more structure, for example, around the discussion, setting up agendas, ensuring that everybody is able to contribute. And so as part of their contribution, to reflect on what has been going on in relation to that particular dynamic, and to reflect on what their contribution might be, and also what they are getting out from the current state of affairs. So oftentimes people might say things like, well, if they are honest, it allows them to hide, so they don't have to essentially disclose or share too much about themselves, about their internal processes, because someone is doing all of the thinking, all of the talking. Sometimes they might say things that it allows them to be therefore less vulnerable. Sometimes they might say things like, well, they don't want to speak, or they don't want to take hair space because A, it might be that they fear retaliation, and so therefore it's a way to manage risk, or B, they fear that they might get it wrong, and so it's a way, again, to manage risk, but very specifically here to not being called out for maybe using the wrong language or saying the wrong thing. And so when people take some responsibility from what is happening in the institution, in the group, in relation to that imbalance, then the harm is likely to be mitigated in relation to that individual who might find themselves in the place of being the Black Advocate. And so the last point might be perhaps to think about what else might this particular configuration or dynamic say about the organizational structure, about safety within the organization, about competition within the organization. And so we can make link in relation to what's going on when that dynamic of the Black advocate gets set up. What might it be illuminating as well, which might be outside of the groups? It might tell us something about the institution, or it might even tell us something about society at large. So, for example, we might be thinking that it says something a little bit about the polarization of issues to do with racism, or the discourses that racism is all about people of color. It's a Black issue, it's a brown issue, it's not a white issue. This kind of discourses, which maintain, of course, white silence, but can also set up this particular dynamic in the workplace. So a little bit of musing on the so-called Black advocate. Some ideas about what we can do to try to resolve or to try to address it if you see it happening. And hopefully some reflection too for people who might be more naturally inclined to find themselves in this position. And so that is all for episode 11. Thank you very much for listening. If you have listened, I hope this episode is not as shouty as episode 10. But that was Gillian from Race Reflections. Again, feel free to put your questions and query to us. And until next time, please take care.